The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock. It's Taking Stock. It is Black Friday, 24th November, 2023. Of course, this time next month, it'll be Christmas Eve. We've got a special guest here. Johnny boy, he's back. Yay. All right.
Good.
It's been two or three messages saying, where's John? We miss him.
I've been busy. I've had a lot. Yeah, stuff to sort out, but I'm back. Well, back Tuesdays and Fridays. Back Tuesdays and Fridays.
Yeah, so John's doing a lot of content for Vox, so it's a lot of stuff to do. So we're doing
special
that. So,
projects. Special projects.
There we are. That's good. And have you been keeping an eye on the markets, John? I know you've been busy with the floods and all that stuff, family stuff, and keep an eye on the markets.
Bits and bobs. Yeah, I mean, I noticed. My own portfolio. I've had some reasonably good news this month. Ten lifestyle. Sorry, was nice. Nice little results there this week. I think shares up about 14% of those now. It's now my best performer by quite some distance.
That's good.
But I have been keeping an eye. It sort of seems to be a case of two steps forward and a couple of steps back, as always.
Yeah. Well, look at one of the big. It's Black Friday. You know, people go for bargains. Of course, with the stock market, when the bargains happen, people tend to be scared. Today, we look at a quick look at Team 17 because they're a cracking company. But they had, and this is the bear market, isn't it? If you come out with something below expectations, you get hammered, hammered. They're down almost 30%.
This is substantially below expectations, really.
Yeah.
And there's certain things in this statement you really don't want to hear. So trading is, at the top line, it's growing, but they've talked of like very significant cost overruns. It's essentially a failure to manage costs.
Yeah. We'll look at that in a second. Hold fire, John. I know you were keen to go. You've been here for a while, but you're keen to go. Let's look at quickly the markets here. Since the autumn statement, John, everything's been down. It's like the industry's been down for 2 days. In fact, if you look at that, the AIM All Share again is the least worst, and the same yesterday. But the FTSE's down, the most amount, 0.25%. Vodafone is Wiser, Kingfisher there, Tesco's, B&M, all the safe plays there, as well, telecoms and supermarkets. Fallers, we've got a couple of miners in there, Glencore, Sage Group, they rose very well in their results of the day, Anglo-American there. But do you know what I want to say as well? People keep saying, when does the Santa rally happen? Some people say it may have happened a little bit early. But these are the stats here on the Santa rally. I did look this up. And, there are better stats in America than the UK, but we have got some from the UK. And essentially, this is a guy called Yale Hirsch, was the founder of the Stock Traders Almanac. He coined the phrase Santa rally in 1972, which is a year after I was born. He defined the term of five final days. That's it, the five final trading days of the year and the first two of the next year. And he said these 7 days historically have shown higher stock prices 79.2% of the time. And he looked at 70 years' worth of data. And he said basically in those 70 years, 57 times they've gone up. And even in the UK, from 85 to 2015, FTSE has made an average gain of 2.26% over the last month of the year, rising in value 83% of the time. Mm. And they typically occur on the 14th, 15th, 16th of December. But it generally does happen. So, probability is very high, sort of 80%-ish that it could happen. But it's towards the back end of this month. So hold your horses because the 14th starts on. And so we're not even there yet. But
it's generally when you've got sort of very thin, thinly traded markets. There tends to be a little bit of hope, bit of Christmas joy in the air. If you want UK stats, incidentally, I mean these as you say, these patterns, they do repeat. They are statistically true, but obviously they don't work every time. Which is where the sort of tricky bit comes in. But if you want UK stats, I think unfortunately they don't publish it anymore. But there used to be this book called the UK Stock Market Almanac by Stephen Eckett. I think they stopped publishing it a couple of years ago, but always worth picking that up because you've got all the sort of seasonal trends throughout the year. And Trading Secrets by Simon Thompson. Quite an old book, but lots of the seasonal effects. And sort of political influences on the markets in there as well, like presidential cycle that sort of thing. So both of those are worth picking up if you do want to play seasonality.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think this is a niche in the market there for UK data. There are certain companies out there that do a lot of data, but I just books and publishing it. The American markets always seem to have more data. Quick few comments here. John Smith. By the way, like I said, bit of housekeeping there. If you could just hit that like button, we get time to get visited more by people. If you do that, if you subscribe as well, and don't forget, download the Vox Markets app. It's free to use at voxmarkets.co.uk/app. But this is from John, and I did say the boss has said to us, hit 5,000 by year end or the show is gone. So John has said, subscribe today, John said. John Smith this is, not you, John. I will persuade my colleagues to do the same. Please don't cancel the show. Your numbers will soar next year when the new bull market peaks. People's interest in stocks again. Tell John we're missing him. There we are.
I'm back.
Yeah. Nick B, by the way, you talked about yesterday, talking about companies need to raise money. And I said, I don't know many companies that raise a significant amount, small caps or micro caps, at a premium. And I give the example of Cooth. So they're one company, they're at 260 a share. I saw sold out. They raised 10 million at £3 a share, which is amazing. But Nick says XP Power managed to warn on profits and debt covenants and then raised a few months later, much higher. Was that after the drop, though? I was surprised. Videndum also managed to place at a very much higher price when the placing was announced. I was surprised at both. And we did cover Sigma Rock yesterday. Riffisoff, two opposing views here. Riffisoff says, I sold Sigma Rock today. They're too acquisitive for me. I think they'll either do very well or quite badly in the next few years. I don't know which.
Big acquisition, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. And last one as well. User KV, Q5123 UK, says, morning, Justin. Love the show. Keep it going. Sigma Rock have made a transformational acquisition potentially, but the headwinds are debt and the sector. However, if we are both at the bottom, the upside could be significant. Mm. What do the charts say? Well, I looked at the chart. It was a bit messy, to be honest. But let's go to the front page of Vox. Let's get there, visit that, see what's on the front page here. I tell you what I do like. Go on.
We've made some changes going on here. So we're publishing a lot more sort of general news now as well.
Oh, okay.
You'll see a lot more news on the site at the moment. We're publishing research as well. So we're starting to pull in brokers' research. So you see a bit of that coming up on the site too.
There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Generally, you have to pay up money for that. So if you go to Vox and just sign up, you can get that research, broker notes and all that stuff.
Slowly but surely, we're adding as they come in.
Yeah, so a bit of news here. BSFS and Bry's Biotech has progressed to two new partner products there. Mm. They're pushing this along here, but, it's a hard market. I do feel like, for pre-revenue or loss of income, it's a very hard market, very hard indeed. And, you're not going to get those rises on, like this in a bull market, this would have risen on that news, just these partnership progress there in a sort of cutting edge area. But in this kind of market, it doesn't, does it?
It's up a little bit.
So there's the chart of Team 17. We'll look at that in a bit. But let's look at BSF. I tell you, come out with some news today. It's not on the front page of Vox. I don't know if it's most read, but I do like that company, Aurigo.
Aurigo.
They're doing a. So that's BF. It's had a bit of a trouble in time there. But Aurigo, I just want to look at the news on these because. They're doing these
airport,
automated sort of machines on there, baggage handling stuff for airports. They've got to deal with British Airways, pretty much, or IEG. They've got one happening in Singapore, and they're a British company, and now they've got an agreement for trials at Stuttgart Airport. So it seems to me this is good. They're getting news there. Mm. Obviously, the word is spreading of how good their stuff is. But at the moment, they're not cheap. They are. Literally loss making, they raised some money recently, but 43 million, not cheap, but maybe it's a bit of hype built into that. But
there's some fairly significant growth forecast here. So, a lot of these projects are essentially trials, trials, which obviously the expectation is that if they work as expected, then that will ramp up into full contracts. So, revenue is expected to be about £6.5 million this year, doubling the year after, and then up to sort of 26.5 in 2025, by which point it becomes profitable. So there is some quite rapid growth forecast. Very, very impressively, the sort of take up on a trial basis. What we need to see is those converting into full contracts, but we won't see that for a time because these things have got to be tested.
Yeah, and I'm assuming they did a fundraise. It's not easy. I mean, it was a discount. You see the chart, they had gapped down in that fundraise, and that's likely. Most companies have to raise money. It will be a discount in this market. And I said, very rare you get a premium raise. Cooth did it. But I assume they'll need to raise again before they hit that profitability.
Yeah, I don't know how much cash they've got.
About £5 million, I think.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the financials, will that get them there? I mean, EBITDA losses of £3.5 million. I mean, it's close. Touch and go. It's touch and go. Yeah.
Okay.
But there's a lot of other strings in their bow as well. They've got big, there's a lot of grant funding that potentially comes in here. And one of their big grant funding incomes was from the EU for autonomous transportation in city centres. So transporting people rather than bags. So lots of interesting stuff going on at Aurigo.
It's a company that's based in the future, isn't it? That's the way it's going, and they're in that trend. And it seems to be almost. Well, it's hard to say if they're market leaders. I don't know the competition there, but they seem to be signing up a lot of trials there. Most followed companies, Rua dropping, of course, Team 17. People, I did say you're catching the falling life on that. But I do say be careful. And in fact, it's worth looking at this because I looked at the where's it the so this is this, if you look at what they said, right. This is what they said. The group now expects to deliver full-year adjusted EBITDA of at least 28.5 million, which includes non-cash impairments. So I looked back and thought, okay, how do they? What's the difference between the EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA and actually profit? And I looked back on last year, and you can see there adjusted EBITDA is 48 and 38. That's closer actually in 2021. So going back to that level, in fact, 28 they're going to do. And if I went down, so in that year, they did a profit literally of 23 million 2021 on 38. So the difference is about 30% lower. So you're looking at about 18 million roundabout if it's a similar kind of metric. Mm. And so they're on at 270 million, which they are now. You're looking at a PE of 14. But of course, what's worrying, why you shouldn't jump in is they're saying they hope 2024 will get better, but they've no idea whether it will or not. You can't tell, can you? So there's no reason why you should jump in now. I just wait. Like always, catching falling ice very rarely plays out. Literally, they go further down normally, you know?
Well, yeah, the intraday on that must look horrible because when I looked at it this morning, they were, sort of 25% down in it, and it worsened to about 40% down.
40% down now,
I mean, that it is a savage profit warning. Absolutely savage. I mean, I'm looking at forecasts that obviously haven't yet been updated. And the EBITDA forecast for 2023 was 48 million, which essentially was flat on last year anyway. So not a lot of growth coming through.
So what? Say that again. They were forecast to do what originally? 48
EBITDA. 48.6.
And so that was same as last year, and now it's gone to 28.
And now it's well down. So it wasn't growing in the first place, and now it's falling off a cliff because of these massive cost overruns. And so this is, obviously it's a fantastically exciting industry, games development. And Team 17 has been around for a very, very long time.
Well, Debbie Bestwick is the CEO. She's done so well. I mean, look at the chart there, right? Look at that. It listed there. And look at that. It's gone from literally. You can see the gain on that just from listing up to the high. It did 400% in a few years. And now it's literally with the bear market, it's come over. And like you say, you get this downward trend and then all of a sudden a big drop off.
You've got to grow to justify a rising share price. And it's just the growth, it hasn't been there of late. And, I like computer games companies. I don't really play them much anymore. But it's a difficult industry. It's hits driven. If you can spend a lot of money developing a game, and if it doesn't work, if no one likes it, no one buys it, then that's basically sunk cost, and it's going to hit the share price. We've seen it many times over the years. I mean, Eidos being a classic example. Obviously did wonderfully well out of Tomb Raider, but then it just got tired. And their problem was they had a lot of development in house, and essentially couldn't crack the whip. They couldn't really manage costs of game development. And
it should be a real Lara Croft in it to crack the whip.
Yeah, indeed. Absolutely. Then they got bought, I think, by SCI Entertainment.
Yeah.
And they ran into trouble.
Exactly. You need, I think to be a successful game developer, you need big pockets and you almost got a factory of churning out hits. And once you get one hit, you then cash in on that by having sequels, because you almost don't. In fact, that's the kind of thing.
The sequels that tail off, doesn't hold the value for forever.
Look at the volume there, John.
And you know,
the
volume.
Volume is 292,000, almost 8 million.
Yeah, I'm not surprised people will be bailing. This is a horrible profit warning. But the other thing they've got here is that I think is fascinating is that they've said that the because games are not meeting expectations, so therefore that's the hits driven aspect of it. They're not performing as expected, so that their own margin, own IP titles are accounting for less than those using third party IP, which they obviously have to pay royalties on. So you license in a game, you know, one, you've paid a big license fee up front, that might not actually, again, the game might not work. But if you're successful, you know, you're paying out at royalties to the IP owner. So, you know, it's there's everything wrong with the statement, I have to say. Yeah, it's really horrible.
I mean, I just keep saying, don't jump in on coming there. There's a lot of trying these falling knife trades. They don't, they very rarely play out. They do. You know, you'll find this company could get, you know, it can improve. But the valuation's gone down. Why? Because there's less profit. So the multiple stays the same. And the multiple was always quite high. It was never a cheap stock, this. And it was one of those companies that I sort of, I missed out on. I remember talking about it a long time back, and I missed out on it. And it rose like crazy. I thought, it's not cheap, that. But now you can see, when you've got companies based on future growth like that, they're a growth company, and they don't deliver the growth, then they take a double hit, you know, a massive hit.
But then they have got intellectual property within the group, and, you know, when the share price gets to that sort of level, then, you know, it does sort of open the company up for potentially being taken out by a bigger developer. So, you know, it will end. There is the scope for recovery, and there is the scope for, you know, some bounce back. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to do looking at this statement.
Yeah. AI investor, welcome back, John. Let's get these out of the way. Lemon Physical, good to have you back, John. Chris, welcome back, John. Keep going, guys. Nobody does it better. Jimbalim, welcome back, John. Where is it? Informer. Now that John's back, we're all going to invest in safe, boring stocks like Diageo because they always perform.
Oh, that's a low blow.
Yeah. But Diageo are not, I mean, look at the chart on Diageo.
It's horrible update. I did notice that.
Let's have a look there. Let's look at the chart there. I mean, it's, you know, for a company that's one of the fund manager's favorites, it's down. It's still going down. It's not. In fact, maybe, who knows? But it is down. What is it down? I can't see the chart there. It's down 47% in the last 7 days.
Really fun picture. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah. I mean, horrid, but, you know, you've got to think. Now, that's a falling knife I'd be tempted to have a look at.
Yeah, maybe Jim. I don't know. I just wouldn't. I would wait the trend, but get above a certain level. Harland and Wolf, don't pay the ferryman. They've had a ferry rejected, essentially. They're going to buy this Isle of Scilly steamship company. That's what it's called. Sounds like quite a modern company there. But they've put a bid in, and it's been unequivocally rejected. So there we are. They didn't.
Yeah, it's strange because they had talked about building some ferries to start a service to the Scilly Isles.
Yeah. There we are.
But so they're obviously trying to accelerate that. When I saw that headline statement regarding possible offer, I thought it was for them. I mean,
I thought that as well.
You know, when you see a statement like that, a headline like that, it's usually an offer for the company that's putting out the statement.
I know, you're just going beyond the headline. I know. Do you know what? I read this. I'm not overly in general. I don't really understand. It's unusual you get a FTSE 100 company most read. Maybe the quality of investors going up here at Voxo. But is it legal in general, most read? Legal agrees a $4.8 billion full buy-in for the Boots pension scheme. And I've read through it. I don't really get it. I assume they're just taking fully managed over there on pensions. And in fact, we have a comment on this. Someone knows more about this. Emmy says, I could see LGEN positioning themselves for today's big deal a while ago. Solvency II ratio was purposely ramped up to 230% for a reason. Alas, we have it. AV sitting on 200% also. Emmy's explain what's happening there, because I'm not over at Legal & Gen story, but I've no idea there. But let's go back to some of the most read, most of us rises here on Vox. Which is good. Let me just scroll back there. Ilika, training update. They've had a couple of bits of news out there, but they are going into their, talking about Stereax, the smaller batteries for medical devices, and in Goliath program now, they're a sort of inflection point where they're trialing the Goliath, which is obviously for EVs and all that stuff, which is where the excitement lies.
This is exciting technology. It's a lithium ion alternative.
Yeah,
and I do think there is a
solid state.
Solid state. There's a lot of scope in you know. I think the technology for electric vehicles is far from settled. So there is a big opportunity. For Ilika, but it's got a long way to go.
It's got a long way. So, you know, revenues at the moment is 1.3 million. That's largely a result of increased grant funding. And they said this positive income position is not expected to be mirrored in the second half of the financial year. So it's grant funding.
I mean, nothing wrong with a bit of grant funding, is that they, you know, it is sort of one-off stuff. You know, grants don't last forever. You know, we saw it with Equipmake, which is also in the electric vehicle space, and it does buses.
Yeah.
Electric bus transformations, repower. And, you know, they obviously began with most of their revenue being grant funded, and they've made that flip to most of their revenue being commercially driven. This is what you want to see from companies like Ilika, BSF Enterprise. You know, grant funding doesn't last forever.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. Unless, of course, you've got a rich uncle called Grant who gives you money right there. Informer, Bitcoin will never go to zero. Apropos of nothing, this is just about Bitcoin. Because every dip will be bought up. It's becoming like a collectible, like Pokemon cards or something that the more you own, the better, no matter. Yeah, well, do you know what? I sort of agree with you. Now, you know, Bitcoin's been around for what? Is it 15 years, I think, now?
Wow.
And it's never been attacked. I mean, the exchanges it sits on, it gets traded on, has been attacked. But Bitcoin itself has never been hacked. The actual, you know, and you've got to say there's some clever people, computer nerds, working in crypto. And so if they can't hack it in any way, maybe they are, maybe they can inquire about it. But I still believe, John, right? The guy, you know, Jochen Nagasaki, whatever his name is, who set it up, you know, 21 million Bitcoin hard limit. I think, well, surely it's possible for him to just up the limit if he wants to. No one knows who he is. No one knows how he really did it. It's a really odd, isn't it, game of configuring or trying to work out mathematical problems to win virtual currency, which is so odd in itself. So I just think if anyone trusts that 21 million is the hard cap limit on Bitcoin,
no. Well, it might be that you have forks, don't you? So you fork into a new currency.
Yeah, but no, I think you just come in again and just mint some more and say, I'm going to add another 4 million. And then once that happens, it'll grab. But what a surprise! I don't know if you saw there the main guy of the biggest sort of crypto exchange, Binance.
Oh, Bankman-Fried
has agreed to
Oh well, no, hang on. Which one, CZ? I mean, you know, which one
CZ,
is it?
Yes.
Which one of the guys that's currently on trial
CZ. So literally, you know, you would have thought that would have hit Bitcoin because it's the biggest currency trading exchange for crypto, but yet it hasn't got Bitcoin. It's like literally at a 2-year high, a 3-year high or something.
Mm.
I mean, it's still off the highs of that ramp, but it does seem resilient.
Yeah, it has been a wild west. And actually, I mean, you know, if the fact that these guys are, you know, either being prosecuted or whatever it might be, you want to see that. You want it to be tidied up. You want it to be, if it's to be, you know, a serious, you know, alternative gold, alternative, you know, store of value, then you can't have, you know, bad actors in that industry. So, you know, maybe it's a sort of counterintuitive argument that the more it's within the scope of the law, then the more viable it is as an alternative.
What is your personal thoughts on Bitcoin? Sometimes I think I've no idea what it's about. It's literally it can't be a store of value because it's literally so volatile. But then part of the, you obviously can't use the currency because it's dropping down like a crazy because you buy something one day and it'll cost you, you know, £3,000 less the next day or something. And I think it's quite genius. It is genius how it's been created and ever bought into it. And I can, and part of me can see it being, you know, the next digital gold, you know, and I can see it being that. But and then one day I think it's nonsense. It's like Fugazi. It's like fairy dust, isn't it? Mining fairy dust. That's what it is, essentially.
Mm.
But I still think it's genius.
But there's money behind it. There's money behind it. So, you know, it's a real thing. With that, with the you know, the size of Bitcoin, you know, its market capitalization is absolutely vast. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but there is enough money behind it to make it a real thing. That's what gold works.
Yeah.
You know, gold
exactly.
is...
Exactly. Gold's only a shiny...
What is gold? It's a piece of shiny metal with a few industrial applications. But the reality is people hold it because of belief. And
shiny metal. It was really that's good. And it's shiny. It's like, you know, if you buy gold, it's very impractical. You can't lug that around, a couple of gold bars. You're going to put that in your bottom
stick
drawer.
In a vault somewhere.
But exactly. But then you get charged for sticking in a vault. So,
buy a physical gold ETF. I mean, you know, there's loads of ways. You can buy a Royal Mint ETF.
Yeah, but the thing is, right, there's all issues with that, isn't it? With Bitcoin, in fact, can you? With Bitcoin, you can hold it in your own wallet. Now, the wallet is sort of virtual, and your Bitcoin in it, how is it just digits, numbers, string together? It's like, what the hell is that?
Well, it's the world is digits and numbers.
It's crazy. So. Yeah, yeah, it is. Actually, well, everything you see here is binary, you know, is zeros and ones. Age of actual sources, I have no idea what they are, why they're rising. It's 2 points, something in market cap, but nothing there, no news there. Obviously, the biggest faller is Team 17. It's washing through some stock there. I don't think there's a lot of news in any of these today. Totally, by the way.
No, it's very quiet.
Yeah, come up with results next week. And they are rising in anticipation towards that because it's been hammered. I said this yesterday. But if you look at the chart, it literally has been hammered. But now, in the last few days, you can see it's starting to rise a little bit, breaking previous highs. So rising towards the results. Hopefully the results can be, because it's been a tough time for many people there going down. Anything else to be looking at, John? Anything else? What did you say, Rosa? There, I did look at them actually. I think.
Oh, 10 lifestyle.
10, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They've gone from loss to profit, haven't they, recently?
I've spoken about them before. There is an interview, if you go back on the site.
With, yes.
With the founder and chief exec, Alex Cheetle. But we.
I'll explain how that works. If I want to join their club or whatever, what I do? Is it like a subscription?
Well, you have to bank with one of their wealth management partners. You know, you have to have you'll be a customer of the. So 10 Lifestyle worked with. So you don't sign up to 10. You sign up to,
Okay.
I don't know whoever it might be.
One of
their banking partners, and their banking partners use these. Essentially, concierge services as a loyalty program for they're basically their high net worth customers. And 10 sort of provides all the infrastructure, the sort of purchasing, the platform for managing all this stuff on behalf of those customers who then offer it to their customers. We're talking things, sports tickets, event tickets, all that sort of stuff. The wealthy have the ability to spend money. They don't overcharge for it. But what they're good at doing is actually securing this inventory in the first place.
Okay.
And it really was building up, they spent a long, long time building up this infrastructure, building up these contact networks, and they've hit critical mass. And that was coming. When we spoke to them, when I spoke to them earlier in the year, it was clear that was coming.
Yeah. So you see, improvement completely. Revenue up 35%, corporate revenue up, EBITDA of 7.1. So all good there. Margins increase. Yeah. Okay, nice. Yeah. Active members up 20% to 353,000.
Yeah.
It's all good numbers there.
Okay, good, really good company.
So what kind of stuff, concierge, what kind of stuff can I get from them then?
Think sort of luxury,
Wimbledon tickets.
I guess you can do Wimbledon tickets, Taylor Swift. I mean, whatever you want. Holidays, travel experiences.
I want to go to Wimbledon.
Food experiences. So people will spend
me and Taylor.
Stupid amounts of money going to see Taylor Swift. That's why she's a billionaire. So that's what they do. They procure these experiences for people who, essentially time poor. It is very hard to get experience to buy these things sometimes. Look at Glastonbury. How'd you get a Glastonbury ticket?
I wouldn't want to.
Well, that's your choice.
I can't do anything worse.
But lots of
honestly, I just literally sit. I'm happy just looking into that mess from my living room. Thanks very much.
Yeah,
I don't like crowds of people. When I see all those people, literally, it's like a city bigger than a city of people, I think, why the heck would you want to go there to stand like half a mile away from an artist you can hardly see with smelly people who can't wash and haven't been in the toilet properly for 4 days or 3 days? And just sit in my own living room, just go to the fridge if I want to drink, and go to my toilet.
The festival experience is a lot different than it used to be. And Glastonbury is very much a sort of, middle-class festival these days. And,
I saw that.
One up the road here.
Middle-class.
Latitude is up the road from me. I mean, they actually have, high-end restaurants in them. Albeit in very large tents, but
I don't want to go to a high-end restaurant in a tent. I'll just go to the actual high-end restaurant. Thanks. So, I've never been tempted by a festival, ever. the thing is, there are people trying to get into this country, living in tents like that, and people are paying like 200 quid for a weekend to do that. Are you kidding?
Anyway. So don't you, that's a great analogy, but
a couple of comments here. Nice little Santa Rally in Venture Group, VLG maybe starting. Paul Hill must be buying. He did mention he's in like Venture. By the way, I'm going to do this on the thing, John, chart of the day. When I get alerts on something, because I've been looking at this company for a long time, and this is Future, and I quite like this. And it's broken. You see this, I've a long way down, and it's like a publisher, and they come up with results next month. And someone did say, can you look at the chart of Future recently? And while I like this, I mean, you can draw some lines in this, but you can see a couple of times, what you've got here is a low down here, and draw a line here, find it low, and it's not been down there since, right? And what it's done is obviously a higher lows, and now it's broke the 200-day moving average, and it's broke previous highs, and they've got results coming out. They did give guidance on, I think it's 284 million adjusted pre-tax profit. They're on about a PE of 9, which previously they were on a PE of like 20-odd. And you can see now, breaking above, really close to that 10 quid level. Now, it's very odd, but round figures on charts, people tend to like. If they break £10, it's good. But nevertheless, it's not on that. Look at that. That's a 20-day moving average, a 200-day moving average. Look at the last time that crossed, right? It hasn't done that, apart from the downtrend to start there. It hasn't done that. Look at that. Back since, after COVID, in June 2020. So that's an historical move here. We're seeing this 200-day moving average cross and the 20-day crossing it. And so if you put a 50 on, but that is... it may be rising towards the results, and the results, it may have a fall off. Who knows if they come up with the warts and all, but they do say the digital market advertising has stabilized, and especially their GoCompare is doing very well, apparently. But there's a new CEO in there from America, which I quite like. He's quite gutsy. But that is a good, that to me is the downtrend has ended, you know, and now it could be the start of an uptrend here. So I quite like that chart, a Future PLC. It's like a, what is it? It's like, is it 1.1 billion? They are buying back shares, but it is a biggie-ish. But I do like it. It's one of those stock market darlings that have been hammered.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look at all that. All transaction shares there, just buying their own shares back there. But, yeah.
Just going on the point about digital advertising, you have seen some better news on consumer confidence. From the UK, in the UK recently.
Oh, I saw that. I've got that here. I'll show you the chart of this, John. You wouldn't believe this. You wouldn't believe this. So I just thought, okay, they said, right, I don't want to reveal the chart. Let me just scroll down so I get the actual bit. Here we go. This is the bit, right? So it says, UK consumer confidence jumps despite lingering inflation pain. British consumers have turned more optimistic about the outlook for the economy and their personal finances. Now, listen, this is the index. GfK's headline consumer confidence index was stronger than anticipated in November, increasing to minus 24 from a 3-month low at minus 30. Forecast is minus 28. So it's minus, right? It's still not positive.
Oh, it's still horrible. Yeah. There's still very much there's nervousness.
But look at this chart, John, right? I thought, okay, well, maybe it's where we are. It is very gloomy, it's nervousness. Look at this chart. This is a chart of consumer confidence going back to 2007.
Yes,
we're never confident. Literally, that's 2015 there. For some reason, in 2015, we were quite confident. And all of a sudden, no, I'm not very confident now. But you can see it's coming back up, though. There are 24 there. So, and you can see big sell-offs in 2007.
Yeah. But this goes back to 2007. So, I mean, it's hardly surprising that we haven't been very confident since 2008. Because, we had the financial crisis. And obviously, that was horrific. And since then, you know, arguably none of the problems have gone away. We've had very short bouts where, you know, we've sort of forgotten about them, but we're still paying for that crisis. Is that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, well, exactly. It was the party, wasn't it? It's a, you know, cheap money pumped in, asset prices going crazy, the stock market went nuts. And like that was almost a 10-year party. And so now we've had a 2-year, you know, hangover. And I suppose, let's put it this way. Let's say you had a 5-day party and you know you're going to have a 2-day hangover. Would you have another party or would you make it less? So
I've had parties like that and I've said I'm never ever going to a party like that ever again.
Yeah, but you do, though.
No, I have.
That's same as the stock market. It happens again. You're at a 10-year party and a 2-day hangover. That's not a bad payoff, really.
Yeah, but it hasn't been a 2-day hangover, has it? I mean, this has been a hangover to end all hangovers, and it was always going to happen. It was always going to be this way. You know, you can't, you know, yeah, but they call it the punch bowl, don't they? You know, and they've got to keep topping up the punch bowl to keep everything ticking over. And it was bound to catch up with the global economy sooner or later.
Yeah, a couple of other headlines. This is quite good news. Nissan to lead $2 billion investment. This is the update there. Nissan's partners have announced today £2 billion plan to build 3 electric car models at its Sunderland plant. Good. This is the Qashqai, the Juke, and also the next electric Leaf. But the scheme could preserve jobs. They said alongside this, a major new battery plant known as a Gigafactory will also be needed.
When they say do they mean they're going to build one, or they need?
I think we're spending $2 billion already. Okay, so government, get your act in order. So I'm assuming the government's now going to try and do. I think Sunak and what is going to try and do their best to get something going there. Give some kind of help to anyone wanting to build a Gigafactory.
They have to,
because let's
do
be
that.
Honest, they need to do something, you know, to win some votes.
Well, I mean, winning votes. I mean,
that's all they're doing.
That's what the autumn statement was all about.
Winning the pensioners'
vote again.
And
giving.
I know. What annoyed me is that a very good lady from Scafilia on Wicked to Money, I was on Radio 5 Live. I think she owns a sort of spa or pampering it thing. She has about 22 people, and she said there's lots of stuff in there I liked, but the thing I didn't like is that. I would love to give all my people a pay rise, but now that's going to cost me £35,000. That a pay rise, was it national living wage? Yeah. So to afford that, I'm going to have my prices up.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's inflation. It's like you're starting to embed inflation again now. So Jeremy, regardless of there was going on, but number one evil is inflation. We have to win this battle. They are stimulating inflation now again, doing that. So it was all about votes. It was nothing about prosperity for longer term for the UK or productivity for longer term. It's all about winning a couple of votes. They've lost the election.
There were certainly some handouts for various sort of science projects and.
Yeah,
development project R&D, particularly it was green and AI and all that sort of stuff. But they didn't look like very big numbers to me, in the grand scheme.
I did like the pension thing going into the now a proportion of pension money is going into the stock market. They didn't do the GB ISA, which was quite annoying, which is like extra allowance for UK only stocks to invest through the ISA. But the pension money going, that should give a little bit of a boost. So Goldie says SPD STP, what's that? Oh, that's silver bullet target price on multiples. Bids up over 100% in the last week. Yes, but honestly, it's a trading stock for now. You can't really do anything with that. It's not long term. I'm so late today. Super Mono. So I'm late today as I got up, held up by a cabal of old biddies at the self-checkout at Marks and Sparks. I'm cheered, however, to see John is back. Everything is going to be okay now. There we are. He's
I saw a story while I was away. I think it's Booths. It's the Northern Waitrose. Booths, I think it's called. It's got rid of all their self-checkouts.
Have they?
Yeah.
I love self-checkouts. I hate talking to people. Really do.
Don't like talking to people.
Justin. I don't need someone handing my stuff, doing stuff for me. I can do that. Now, do you know what's good now, though? It's just Asda. I do completely automated. Just get those firing guns, little laser guns. Do your own scanning. It's all in your bags. And then you just go in, pay it. Literally, hopefully, I can go from, getting out of the car, back into the car, back home, without talking to anyone. Perfect.
I'm surprised you bother leaving the house. Why don't you just get delivered?
I don't. Very rarely, definitely wouldn't go to a festival. This is just ending on this. I can see a fight happening here. Listen to this, John. This is a funny bit of news here. So Aldi and Lidl, they always rip off brands, don't they? They do, poke
and
pull.
Yeah, it's great.
Or ridiculous stuff like that. I know, but look at this. Thatcher's invited a judge to taste test in a row with Aldi. So the judge is going to go in and drink some ciders. So a judge has been invited to taste test, rival ciders. Now, the Thatcher's are taking Aldi to court, or they have taken them to court, infringing his trademark. It's cloudy lemon cider. Mm. The family accuses Aldi of gaining unfair advantage by copying the product of its Taurus cider in both taste and appearance. Aldi lawyers, where did they get away with this?
I love it.
Riding the coattails of it. What's that?
The water cute. There's
I know. It's like
San Pellegrino, which is the original brand, and it's called San Celestino.
I know.
I love it.
Know that they have stuff like Marmite for Marmite, or something ridiculous, or Absolute for vodka, something ridiculous. But anyway, Thatcher's Cloudy Lemon Cider was released in February 2020. Aldi's just come 2 years after Taurus brand in 2022. Mm. It took them a couple of years to get it right. but it's on the shelves now, a bit cheaper than that, Thatcher's. I can see, honestly, they all go to taste testing now, these insider. I think there's actually a physical fight will break out. It's like, they're doing it. It's like, the thing is, they can't admit they're doing it, but they are obviously doing it. You know, they're not allowed to admit, so, you know, plausible deniability. Yeah. Don't say anything. Yeah. Don't say anything. But there we are. Any more comments? Any other thoughts, John? Oh, wow.
I'm having a look forward to next week. Oh, no, I've lost the page with it all on. What we got coming up? I just have to think about what we're coming up next week, seeing it's a Friday. Yeah. And what's jumped out at me? So, Focusrite Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to have a chat with them. You know, they do sort of music equipment. Worth a look. Canovo that day as well. Though I think there's a bid. And Totally, you mentioned as well Tuesday.
Yeah, Totally. There's also something else I mentioned. Yesterday I mentioned it is on Tuesday. Results out. Oh, VP it was. Someone looked at the VP PLC.
Yeah, Tuesday. Impact Asset Management Wednesday. I'm intrigued by that because there's been a real exodus from the sort of specialist asset managers, particularly ESG ones. So I want to see how their numbers are holding.
Who's that?
Up.
Which one?
Impact Asset Management, Environmental.
Yeah.
Investor. Yeah. And then on Thursday, SRT Marine, we've looked at a few times.
Oh, yeah.
These are the Maritime Domain Awareness Systems. And what we want to see is the transformation from, you know, what the transceiver sales, you know, things that are on boats that tell everyone where it is, to these big, big system sales. And that transition is what we will be paying attention to. Dr. Martins next week.
Martin Boots.
Been a horror show for Dr. Martins. Is there any wear left on the soles of those boots?
Nice. Look at that. All the down. Let's go to this. Yeah.
I can't see this staying listed. If this continues.
Yeah. I know. It's not looking good there. But and finally, if you think of any, I can't think of any others. I don't go into Aldi that often. I don't go up very often. But apparently Gregory says that Aldi's got a big stack. It looks very much like a Big Mac. That's a good big stack.
Nice.
The marketing people there must be laughing in Aldi. So how similar can we get the name that actually replicating what it is? And it looks exactly like it. A big stack? Good. Mm-hmm. We'll go with that. Well,
there is a serious investing point to this, isn't there? Which is that you know, how much
brands
protection do brands actually provide the companies to own them? So Unilever. I mean, Unilever is obviously, you know, somebody. They've had their chart looks pretty. It's not looking great, actually.
No. In this cost of living crisis, honestly, I said for a long time. I think honestly, you always get some people wanting brands, people who've got lots of money and stuff like that. But I think generally, people will go for quality and low price. If it's good quality, they don't care about the brand. And so, you know, but years ago, that wasn't the case. Almost, you know, I said Hyacinth Bouquet kept up appearances. It almost, you had to look up and keep up the Joneses and have a brand. These days, you're almost ridiculous if you don't go for the high quality cheap option. It's like someone's got one over in you. If you've got a voucher in a restaurant, you know, if you get it cheaper some way, go for it.
The same is true of, I mean, Diageo's problems were largely caused by Latin America, but, you know, do people trade down booze? Do people trade down their sort of little luxuries in life? Yes, people they might mess. Do. But then the question is, when you know, people are feeling a little bit more fluff, do they go back to their brands?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, And actually, you know, the reason brands exist is, you know, historically, to offer reassurance to the people that are buying them that the product is safe above all else. And you know, so actually, you know, there are many markets in the world where brands do actually still matter in that regard. And you know, the likes of Unilever and Diageo are sort of well positioned in sort of the you know, growth markets because of that still.
Thank you very much, everyone. Have a nice weekend. And don't forget, by all means, if you could, just hit that like button. It gets us found more. Hopefully, get more subscribers. If you don't hit 5,000 by the end of the year, the show is off, of course. So help us with that. Get your friends, family, cats and dogs, everyone to hit that subscribe button. And don't forget, download the Vox Markets app. It's free, I tell you. But it's absolutely, you know, it's valuable. It's priceless.
Yeah, lots more content going to be coming onto the site in the next few weeks.
There we are. And by the way, if you just joined, John's going to be here on a regular basis now, Tuesday and Friday. Because he's doing other things like taste testing at Aldi. marvellous stuff. Have a nice weekend, Johnny. Speak next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.